WNST, Castle Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively into the football season here, the baseball playoff season, the biggest series in the history of Camden Yards regular season upcoming. We're going to be down at the Nest this week. You can find it at the top of the Convention Center, or as I like to say, right above the cupcake on the logo, right at the Convention Center, overlooking Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And I'm wearing my old school for those of you out on the Zoomer today. I've got my 69 White Sox throwback, my Aparicio throwback on. And I wore it for this guy because whenever he puts his stuff out on Facebook, and I'm a religious reader and devotee to all things Tom Lavero of the Washington Times. But you always have some cigars and curveballs and old school, and you got Spanky or the alfalfa. You put all sorts of funny little old school things on. So I figured like this once-in-a-lifetime Aparicio jersey was perfect for me to wear for you because it's baseball season here, Tom, and you love Baltimore.
Yes, it really is baseball season there. It actually is, as opposed to Washington, where they're an afterthought these days.
Well, look, your background is Baltimore, and you've sort of the last couple, three decades been like Washington with the Times or whatever. Where do you sit on this thing? Because you've seen it all. Your eyes are even a little older than mine. And I've written books on all of this and the changes and where we are. But it is kind of wild. Peter's alive. Jimmy Buffett's dead. Right. Let's start with that. John's running the team. There's no lease. The team's the best team in the American League, if not the best team in baseball. And they can prove that next month. Your team is sort of fealty to the Angelos family, can't pay their guy Strasburg. Angelos owes them $150 million or whatever the math is on that at this point. And, the whole structure of all of this has changed so dramatically since your days at the Baltimore Sun.
Yes. It really is amazing how these two franchises are joined at the hip now. I mean, the Lerner family, who owned the Nationals, announced about a year and a half ago that they were putting the team on the market for consideration for sale. Well, that's a futile gesture as long as the new owner doesn't have control of their television rights. And that's still being, a major source of dispute between the Orioles and the Nationals. Now, I know they reached an agreement recently, finally, on their initial dispute for the money between 2012 and 2017. But they haven't agreed on the amount yet. That's still being negotiated. And then they have to negotiate all over again the 5 years after that, 2017 to 22. So the Nationals are in limbo because no one's going to buy the team as long as their TV rights are being held hostage, so to speak.
Right.
Now, I think all this goes away when Peter Angelos moves on to the pearly gates. He's been reportedly incapacitated for years, but he's still, hanging in there. And from my sources tell me that when he passes on, it's in his will that the team will be sold, that it won't stay within the family. And there are bidders already lining up, anticipating that moment when it does happen. And baseball is not going to let anyone own the Orioles unless the Masson deal just disappears and everyone is in charge of their own TV rights. So it's a very complicated baseball situation. But at least in Baltimore, you get to enjoy the baseball. In Washington, that's not the case right now.
Tom, you and I have been down this river. I mean, I've written tomes and books and researching your work, the Washington Post work, the Sun when they used to do that kind of work. Now the Banner trying to pick up the pieces. And I saw Pam Wood a couple of weeks ago down in summertime with Wes Moore and sort of like, what's going on with the lease? Steve took his money. He hides. I mean, he doesn't meet with the media. He doesn't take questions. There's no big vision from Sashi Brown about what they're going to do with their $600 million. Meanwhile, John's like, chasing the federal government with lobbyists, holding up Westmore, wanting $300 million, blowing up the parking lot that they can't build on because it has a tunnel underneath of it. And more than that, sort of even going after Steve to some degree to say, well, if I get $300 million more, they'll have to give you $300 million more too. Like, it's sticky, but from the fans' perspective, they don't – it's not a story – that people follow, but it's like, man, it's a lot of money and it's an incredible thing. And you've been down to Atlanta, you've been to these places where San Diego, these places where they've really built the stadium after Camden Yards, where they thought of the whole community, where Camden Yards was linked to the Inner Harbor and the Inner Harbor died. And I know I lost the real estate in between there, right? Like I lost my ass, right? Because I'm invested there because there is no mixed use, as they would say. And now John comes along with this idea, but it's just, it ain't really an idea because there's no blueprint. Nobody knows who's paying for it. It's sloppy. And at this point, the team brings such light to the games themselves. Tom, there's not a lease. I mean, it's, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it's not good. I mean, it's not good. It's not good for Adley Rutschman or for the future Gunnar Henderson that he's popping off about not having money. Fans aren't really going to the game. They'll be there for Adam Jones this week, but like, you know, buying $5 and $10 tickets is nice, but that's not the business model the Yankees have, you know?
John Angelos couldn't develop a Lego neighborhood. And the people who are serious about business in the city know that. That was just a ridiculous pipe dream that he was going to develop some kind of mini city around the around Camden Yards.
Where there's no land. Where there's no land. No parking.
They'll sign a lease. I mean, you know the Angelos way of doing things. You don't make the deal until you have to make the deal. That's what they do.
So you're saying December 31st at 3 p.m, we'll find out that there's been a 1 year extension because that's really what this is going to happen, right? Like
that's
literally,
that's
right?
Probably what's they're not going anywhere. Okay, they're not moving. Okay, they're not going to put baseball. It's not going to let. I mean, he went. You know, Rob Manfred may wind up letting the Athletics owner move, but there's a big difference between that and the tenants at Camden Yards. That's never going to happen.
But if John could hoodwink anything out of this, it really would add value when Daddy passes to whatever he would get in the other world, right? So stealing some money from the people and putting it in at $600 million, that already adds that value to the next group that comes along and buys it. And I mean, that's what all this was about when his dad bought the team, right? Like the team doubled in price because it had $50 million in cash sitting around because it was a brand new stadium. They had an all-star game. They were selling $3.5 million. I mean, like Peter bought it at its peak, crushed it, but it's just siphoned money off of this television deal. And nobody knows where the money is, Tom. I mean, everybody I talk to up here says that they're not just crying poor. Nobody can find the money, which is why they're selling off all this property and stuff.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? And I was really disappointed in the New York Times with their profile of John Angelos a couple weeks ago.
I had Tyler on, yeah.
I mean, that was embarrassing. I mean, for one thing, you know, John Angelos is quoted in there saying, I wish I could show you the books to show you, you know, to show you our losses. And you don't call him on that since he promised a couple months ago to open the books to the media. You don't include that in your questions, in your story, the fact that he promised to open those books and then never did that. You know, I mean, it gave him credibility that he doesn't have really. I mean, again, he's the Fredo of the family. They're all, no, both brothers are Fredos for that matter.
Tom Lavero is here. He calls it the way he sees it, right down the middle at the Washington Times, has a podcast. He's a good man and a long time journalist with the capital J and reporter with the capital R and all that good stuff. So, you know, for me, the thing that rocked me this week, not just, you know, I wrote this letter to Bisciotti and Harbaugh, and as a reporter and as a business person, as a civic leader, like all the things that I've done here for 30 years doing this, getting thrown out. And thinking about both of these ownership groups here in the parking lot and the playoff games and clearing my calendar for maybe flying off to World Series games in a couple of weeks and all this stuff that's going on, you had a real awakening, epiphany. Like, whatever happens the day after Peter dies and the next person comes in and maybe I get a press pass back, or maybe I feel better about going, or maybe I buy a 13-game book with my wife, or maybe I don't know. You know, like, I don't know what's – I'm 54. I'll be 55 next month. I feel like I got some life left in me, and I feel like I'm about to outlive this the way Steve Miles told me I was 17 years ago, that at some point there's going to be somebody else that owns it, somebody else that runs it. I'm going to go back. I'm going to put my orange Aparicio 79. It looks like the Sensei's or Glenn Gulliver. But it says Aparicio on it, and I get to wear it at Camden Yards and, like, feel good about having survived it. And you went to the Washington Commanders game on Sunday. Tom, I'm lit up because that's why I called you. I'm like, tell me how it feels. My heart needs to know how it feels. Tell me, please. Is it would it be like George Michael and Elvis coming back to life and performing for me?
Well, it really was like, and I don't want to diminish the real life suffering that you know, people who have been held hostage feel, you know, but it really was like you had a mass group of people that had suddenly been freed from a hostage situation. It was like a euphoric atmosphere of people who, I mean, it wasn't just the change of ownership, it was the idea that they thought there was no chance of this ever happening. And Dan Snyder is a relatively young man. He's as old as you are, okay? And there was no indication up until the past year or so that he was ever going to go anywhere. And that, you know, he's got a son who's a football player at Appalachian State who, you know, you would think might wind up being in the business and might wind up owning it. Nobody knows what the son would be like. From all accounts, he's a pretty decent kid. But again, this seemed like a forever nightmare situation. And for it to have turned, I mean, to force out an NFL owner is literally like a supernova. It happens. It happens very rarely. I mean, Jerry Richardson was forced out after the investigation into his charges of, you know, sexual harassment and charges that he used, racial slurs and things like that. But he was 79 years old. Okay. Dan Snyder, who has made a history of litigating, you know, folded up his tent. He got paid a lot of money to fold up his tent, but Dan Snyder's personality was wrapped up in being the owner of the Washington Commanders. And Sunday was like all of a sudden they opened up the gates and everybody felt free. It was a good thing they won the game. I think that was a nice bow on the package. In the scheme of things, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference, but it would have been a little bit of disappointment if they hadn't won the game. Taking advantage of a packed house, and packed house these days, it's not the old FedEx Field. You know, FedEx Field at one point had 90,000 capacity. Well, they've closed down seats. They've torn seats out. Now it's more like 64,000. Okay, which is I mean, in today's NFL, and a lot
bigger
of
stadiums, than RFK was, right? By 10,000. Yeah.
So they filled it up. You know, the league set them up with a patsy opponent in the Cardinals that are looking to lose without fans that are going to travel. So it was an ideal situation, and it was a great day. It was a great day for the city. Everything went right. The fans were so excited to see Josh Harris, the new owner, on the field. They were excited to see Magic Johnson there. So it was a great day. And for one, you know, for a while, all Josh Harris has to accomplish is not being Dan Snyder. And that puts him ahead of the game.
Tom Lavero is here. He is an old schooler, a one-time colleague at the Baltimore Sun 37 years ago. He's been at the Washington Times for a long time, chronicling Washington sports, but just sports in general and ownership and the kinds of issues and the kinds of depth that I like when I read a columnist, which is why I became columnists, stealing from you guys and all of your thoughts about all of this. But you know, the poignancy of it, I guess, is what I was looking to say. Like, I have friends that were old school Joe Gibbs, Riggins, Fun Bunch, Hogs, all of that stuff that went down there, were a part of all of that, wore the headdress, all the stuff they don't want on the internet 35 years later. But the notion for anybody there that there's promise, I mean, what is that franchise now? After George Preston Marshall, after a nickname that is a racial slur for most of its existence, but with this rich history of football, and at one point the only game in town, even when the Bullets and Caps were there, it was still the only game in town. Now you've had Capitals Parade, right, and Hall of Fame players. You've had Nationals Parade and players that matter, and I guess the Wizards are still the Wizards, but what can they be? What can the Commanders be? And in your mind, like, they're going to change the name, right? I mean, they're not going to keep this thing.
No, they're not going to keep Commanders. They're not going to go back to the Redskins. That's an absolute. There's a segment of the population that wants them to do that. That's not happening. That's dead and buried. I'll be honest with you. I really believe that if Jack Kent Cook rose from the grave, and he found out that the team wasn't named the Redskins anymore, he'd be elated, because that meant that the wound had been opened, and you were moving on. So they're moving on, but they're not going to keep Commanders. They're going to try to distance themselves from everything related to the Dan Snyder era. It's just going to take some time to do that.
I don't think baseball and steroids in the Hall of Fame, just wash it away.
I don't think Ron Rivera is a very good coach. I don't think he's going to be there after this year. I think the front office will be a turnover. I think the business side will be turnover, major turnover. Josh Harris owned part of the Pittsburgh Steelers, so he's not unfamiliar with the NFL. He has contacts in the league. I'm sure he has an idea of who he would want to coach this team, who he would want to be the general manager of this team. He took the team over at such a late date this summer, though, that he really couldn't make those kind of changes. But the name's not going to stay, and eventually they're going to wipe everything related to Dan Snyder as much as they can off the books.
So what do you make of this this baseball team here on the field, Tom? I mean, you follow the Nationals a little bit more. You saw these guys come up from Houston. You saw how bad it was and how good it can be. This is really – you've watched a lot of baseball, man. This has been something.
It caught me by surprise at how good they really are. I mean, they're the best team in the league. And you argue, like you said, maybe the best team in all baseball, them and the Braves, you know? What's interesting is for the month of April, I was in Spain for the whole month of April. My wife has family there, and we went over there. We had a great time. But when I got back, my editor said to me, what about covering the postseason in Baltimore? And that hadn't occurred to me, because when the Orioles were in the postseason in 2014, 2013, those years, the Nationals were in the postseason the same exact years. So I never came up to Baltimore because I was covering Nationals postseason. So I never got to experience any of that last run with Buck Showalter.
Now I was sitting on a bus coming back from New York from losing to the Yankees, watching that game where they were beating the Cardinals and everything was perfect. I remember watching that literally on the phone on the bus, and I'm like, oh man, they're never going to. I mean, the Nationals were really snake bitten as a postseason team that was very, very good.
Yes, they were. And they finally, thankfully, overcame that for them. But this is going to be a new experience for me, and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you know, and I know how great Camden Yards can be when it's filled up and rocking. And I would think for postseason baseball, it would be exactly that. So I'm looking forward to it, and I think this team can, I know in a lot of sports, the teams that have been to the playoffs before, I think, have a leg up on a new team like the Orioles, but they might have so much talent that they may not know they don't belong yet.
Well, Tom, I always appreciate visiting with you. Where are you podcasting? What are you doing? We got to get you a little better. I know you've been a little under the weather here. I appreciate you making some time for us here. What all are you working on right now? Any books, anything like that?
No, I'm not doing any. Writing books is hard, Nestor. You know that. That's hard work.
That's heavy lifting.
Yeah. So, excuse me.
I tell my wife when I do a book, it's very Jack Torrance. It's very method acting. It's very all in. You know, it's very nothing else. I don't watch anything, hear anything. Yeah, it's it for being an extrovert, it's tough being an author.
Yeah. So it's too hard work for me at this stage. My old radio partner, Kevin Sheehan, has a podcast every day called The Kevin Sheehan Show. And I co-host it with him on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I'm also writing twice a week for the Washington Times as well. And that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Well, I'll tell you what, for you and me, it's we've gone back a long. When did you leave the Sun?
1992, January of 92.
So we were colleagues all 6 years I was there then, I guess. So that's
yes, we were. And we left at the same time.
I left January 15th, 1992. I picked up my buyout check. I literally picked it up. I don't even know if I put it in the bank. Maybe I put it in the bank, and I got in the car, and I drove to Minneapolis for the Super Bowl. Stedman got me tickets for that Super Bowl. Obviously, it was the Washington, the Thurman Thomas Super Bowl at the Metrodome. And I drove out there with my best friend and my roommate, John Raphaelides. We saw Prince, we saw Guns N' Roses, we saw Gretzky play, we saw Jordan play Larry Nance at the stadium. I mean, like, it was the greatest week of my life, but that was my buyout week. And then I started doing radio with Kenny Albert. hey, man, I'll be 32 years on December 13th. So it's been a long, strange trip, Tom Levero, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. But I admire what you've done with that, Nestor. You started a sports talk radio show, and that took so much radio station. And that took so much guts, and I admire what you've done over the years.
Well, it would have looked really stupid if it crashed and burned like everybody predicted back in 98, but it's my 25th anniversary. Tom, they got me a cupcake and fireworks and everything here. So, hey, man, crab cakes for you when you're feeling better. And it sounds like, I mean, as the magic number ticks down here, you and I will be in the same room together again at some point in October doing the baseball thing. So please come on up. Have a beverage like the old days, my brother, all right?
Okay, boss.
Tom Levero. I love to read him. You'd love to read him, too. Find him out at the Washington Times. Old school, one of my OGs out there doing the podcast thing and talking about sports in the intelligent way, right? Like knowing what's going on. So I appreciate everybody out there who has reached to me this week in regard to our column and stuff. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're at Fadley's on Friday the 15th. Going to be there with the Coppin State folks, Dr. Anthony Jenkins, as well as basketball coach Larry Stewart. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Win Donation, 866-9. And of course, the newest sponsor, Jiffy Lube, for our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, our 25th anniversary, brought to you by Curio. I'm going to be telling you more about that next week as well. And we're at Coco's next Thursday, eating crab cakes with Marcella and having a good time in Lauraville. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.